Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Anne Baldwin.
And good morning once again, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Connection. I am one of your hosts, Anne Baldwin, and I'm the president and CEO of Baldwin Media. And my other co-host, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, will not be joining us on the show because we've got a full house, and we only have so many microphones. So anyway, she's not going to join us, but you know, she's here in spirit, and she's listening to this program. And we're so excited to have two great folks to talk about a very interesting subject on today's program. We've got Robin McHale, and she's a founder and executive director of True Colors. And Robin, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. And John Lawler, a returning guest. He's the director of homeless youth services at The Connection. So we've got a very interesting topic today for our audience because it's something that we don't always address, correct? Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about LGBTQ issues and things that are happening here in our state with homeless youth. So, Robin, why don't you start by defining, you know, it used to be just LGBT, mm-hmm. and now we've added a Q to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have go ahead.
Good. So, Q is, that's the least of it. So here's how I always introduce the subject.
All right.
True Colors works with gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, questioning, two-spirit, same-gender-loving, pansexual, flexual, not straight, not labeling, straightish, straight so far, straight with options, straight but stuff happens, gender-bending, bi-gendered, pan-gendered, agendered, asexual, non-binary, and other sexual and gender minority youth. So the labels keep
Wait a minute.
Standing.
That sounds like a doctor. That sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
It almost does, right? And so you know, I always start with the litany of the labels just to let people know that the labels are changing. And so the Q, for some people, the Q might mean queer. For some people, the Q might mean questioning. Depends on where they are in their journey. And queer is a word that some people really have reclaimed. You know, it's a word that was used to hurt people years ago.
I mean, I have a problem even saying it.
Right. And it's a word that definitely requires contextualization, that it's sort of okay for some people to say and not for others. But for some young people, it's an identity. You know, it's actually how, and actually older folks too, that it's an identity. You know, I recommend with queer that people use it very carefully and that I say, generally speaking, I say LGBTQ+ and just leave it at that.
Okay. And the thing is, you've also written several books and articles on LGBT youth concerns, and you're known nationally as well as a leader with youth concerns. So let me ask you this. How does True Colors and The Connection, how do you work together, John? What's the connection here? Literally.
I mean, in our particular program that really focuses on providing a shelter and longer-term housing services to homeless youth, LGBTQ plus youth are so highly overrepresented in that particular population. Some studies have them up to 40% of all homeless youth are LGBTQ plus. So pretty early on, getting our feet wet about 5 years ago working with the population, we knew that we were going to hit a huge influx of youth that we just did not have a huge amount of experience with yet. So we reached out to Robin to help with some of the training, help getting us to understand the issues that LGBTQ plus youth are facing when they come into a program like ours. And True Colors has just an incredible web, an incredible network of being able to find these very vulnerable young people. And so they became a pretty consistent referral source for us as well. LGBTQ plus homeless youth are often like the truly invisible population. They are very difficult to find. They do not try to enter mainstream shelter systems because of concerns over safety, because of concerns over lack of affirmation when they're there. And so the agencies like True Colors have just been instrumental in being able to help connect them to our particular resources to get them off the streets and get them out of very dangerous situations.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, John and Robin. I never thought about that, right? So, you know, they're a vulnerable population. So let's, obviously, I don't ever focus on stereotypes, but what is the demographic? Who are these homeless youth out there? What's their age range? What kind of backgrounds do they come from?
Well, I would have to say they're from every background. That the thing that they have in common most often is the lack of family support. That the single most important indicator of outcome for kids is the response of their families. Mm-hmm. When their families are supportive, in general, those young people have no higher risks than any other teenager. But when their families are rejecting, that correlates with every risk factor you can name, including homelessness. So what a lot of these young people have in common, it's not about race, ethnicity, religiosity, or any other sort of demographic other than the fact that their families, for the most part, were not supportive of their identities, and family harassment or family violence or discord resulted in them leaving. And a lot of young people couch surf for a long time before they end up homeless. And to John's point, many LGBT youth feel like the services will not be supportive of them, that they can't trust the staff to protect them from other youth. They also can't trust the staff to not be the perpetrators themselves. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we've really appreciated about our relationship with The Connection is that when they went into this, they invested in making sure that they understood what the needs of the population were. And they've done, you know, focus groups with their young people. The young people that they're housing, that they meet with them regularly to say, you know, how are things going? What could we do better? And so, you know, I think they've really created a system of support for every young person that comes into their program, including those who are LGBT. And so we feel really comfortable referring kids to them because we know that they'll be well taken care of once they get there.
Yeah, it was a really important insight for us when we were first starting our program, and that we spent a lot of time interviewing the LGBTQ plus youth that we had in our program to see what would work, like what would the right type of shelter model look for them. And what they consistently described was not a shelter at all. It really wasn't in a place where you're going to be with 20 other residents and you have to worry about, okay, am I going to be bullied or harassed or at risk there? And so that's exactly what we didn't do with our shelter model. We just rented out a bunch of two-bedroom apartments throughout the community, and that worked. I think after 2 years, 25% of the individuals that we served were trans. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of our litmus test that, okay, this is a crisis housing model that the trans community will actually accept. They'll view as safe enough to enter and avoid a lot of those terrible outcomes that right. a lot of youth face when they don't get into kind of a safe environment.
But you're still renting apartments in mainstream America, right? And mm-hmm. mainstream Connecticut. How's that working out?
It's a tough pitch. We're very fortunate in terms of we've been able to find some rather large property owners who really do buy in to what we're trying to do, to provide the safety to homeless young people, knowing that for the most part, they became homeless because of family rejection. They have the potential to resolve their homelessness pretty quickly with the right supports. We've just been very, very fortunate in terms of being able to get our foot in the door in the right places and prove it to the landlords and the community that this can work.
So how long have you two been working together? How long has True Colors and Youth Services at The Connection, how long have you had this relationship?
At least 5 years.
Yeah, I think we're about five, going on 6 years old in terms of the homeless youth program.
So long enough to measure the outcomes. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about that. We know what the issues are going in. Mm-hmm. What are some of the success stories that you've seen, Robin, and even, you know, you, John, coming out?
One of the things that we've seen is that a lot of times the youth, especially the 18 to 24-year-olds, that they just need, if they didn't come in through the system, you know, if they didn't spend their lives, their early teen lives in the system, but became homeless or unstably housed a little bit later in their process, that often they just need, you know, a safe place to land so that they can develop the skills that they need. So, you know, I think about some of the first cohort that were in there, that there's, you know, a number of those young people are now working full-time. They continue to work with you, actually, in the youth project.
Giving back.
Yep, giving back. And so not only have they gotten their lives on track, but they're now working to help other young people get their lives on track and to use their experience as having been homeless or unstably housed to make sure that the systems that we put together are really meet the needs of other young people. So,
what are some of their biggest issues in society? I mean, especially for our listening audience, which, you know, here we are on WTIC. And what are some of the biggest, you know, obstacles that these kids face and some of the stereotypes? I don't even want to talk about the stereotypes because, you know what, if we talk about them, we're drawing more attention to it. So I don't want to do that. But, and you know, and my, this is maybe one of those questions, like, I can't believe you're going to ask that, but I want to ask the questions that I want to ask and that maybe our listeners want to ask. Why does it, or is it me, that it seems that this new community and, you know, this questioning your sexuality is much more prevalent today? I don't remember, you know, back in my day, you know, we had, you knew, we've either you were straight or you were gay, and really there were few of those in my, in, you know, good old redneck Colorado. But why does it seem like it's such an emerging population?
I think on the one hand, there's now a language for people to describe their experiences. So, you know, the average age that young people are coming out as gay, lesbian, or bisexual is 11 to 13.
Wow.
And 10 years ago, the average age was 19 for boys and 22 for girls. So you think about that. You know, 10 years ago, people were launched, and if their families, you know, had a difficult time, they had some ways to care for themselves. Now, young people are coming out sooner. They have access to the internet. Almost everybody knows somebody personally who's gay, lesbian, or bisexual, and so many, that breaks down a lot of the stereotypes, a lot of the biases. I think...
So that's a good thing.
And that's a good thing.
Okay.
And so I think that that's why more people are coming out, feel safe enough to come out. There's no indication that there's more LGBT people than there used to be, just that people are open about it differently. Mm-hmm. It used to be that you thought they were, you know, unmarried women living together. Yeah, not so much. But, right. And then for trans kids, I think it's also a similar thing, that there's a language to describe their experiences that didn't exist, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago. And so people thought they were the only one, or they thought that they didn't have any words to describe it. We still, I think that you know, when I do my trainings and I ask people, how many people know somebody personally who's lesbian, gay, or bisexual? Everybody, every hand in the room goes up. Then I ask, how many people know somebody personally who identifies as transgender? And then less than a third of the hands go up. And one of the most effective forms of prejudice reduction is face-to-face interactions over a period of time. So, you know, the more you meet people and the greater variety of people that you meet, the more it begins to break down the stereotypes
absolutely.
That you have.
Absolutely.
So for trans folks, lots of folks think they don't know anybody who's trans, and so they have to rely on what they hear in the media or, you know, what they see on television. And so there's still a huge number of myths and stereotypes about who folks are. And the truth is, the people who don't fit neatly in a box called masculine or a box called feminine, especially if they were assigned male at birth, or boys, get huge amounts of harassment still. And it starts really early. And, you know, that the box for femininity has gotten pretty big.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Right.
Over
the last 25 years.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. The box for masculinity continues to be very small and very rigid.
Right. That's a really good point. Yes, absolutely. So when you see these kids, and you said you get 2-bedroom apartments, so do they have roommates? Do you put folks together? How do you figure that out?
Yes, we kind of do it's almost like a game show. It's like the matching game a little bit. So we just see, oftentimes when we come across a youth, they are actively homeless in really dire circumstances. So we just put them in the first open bed that we have. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of test out the waters to see how that match is going with the roommate. We have the ability to kind of switch people around because we have so many apartments to see what works best. What we've come across, though, is that there's such a need, particularly for trans youth who have the most hesitation towards engaging in shelter services. Mm-hmm. There is such a need that we've never, at any point in our program's history, only ever had just one homeless trans youth to work with. We're always at least two.
So how many do you have in your facility right now?
Right now we have...
Or in your program, I should say.
Yeah, and program in terms of our kind of modified shelter services is about 3 trans youth right now. In our longer-term housing services, that goes about 2 years, I want to say it's an additional 3.
So that's not very many.
No, it's not too many, but I think we're serving about, I want to say about 40 in total right now.
So if you have, I don't know, I can't do the math, I'm a social worker, but if you look at 6 trans youth out of 40 beds, you can do the math on that. Trans folks represent just around 1% of the population, so it should be 0.4.
Right, right.
And you've got 6. So there's an overrepresentation of trans youth in the system. And for us, we find a lot of times kids who come in through DCF, you know, that LGBT youth and trans youth in particular have many, many more times the placement. So, you know, like a typical kid might have 2 or 3 placements while they're in care. A trans kid might have 20 or 30 placements.
Homes.
You know, moving around from group home to group home, from foster home to foster home. And when kids move like that, it impacts their emotional development. It certainly impacts their educational development. Just totally disrupts their schooling because they're changing schools all the time and they're losing time. And then they age out and they don't have the education or the skills to get a job that creates a living wage. And so, you know, nationally, about 11% of children who age out of care, regardless of their orientation or gender identity, become homeless within a year.
Wow.
And for LGBT youth, that number's significantly higher.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Robin McHalen. She is the founder and executive director of True Colors, and John Lawler, who's the director of homeless youth services at The Connection. So what's the entry process? You know, a lot of people out there listening may say, so, you know, how do I access these services? I mean, obviously, you can go to The Connection Inc. TheConnectionInc.org is the website. But you're physically out there, like, walking the streets looking for these folks? Or how do you find them?
I mean, our strategy, for the most part, has to really been create a network.
They talk to each other. Social media. Word gets around.
Yeah. So a lot of our referrals come from youth that have gone through our program because they become aware of other LGBTQ plus youth who are also struggling with housing or who are actively homeless. In terms of what you were mentioning, the street outreach piece, which is walking the streets, that's not going to be a very effective way to find LGBTQ plus youth. They are intentionally in trying to hide for the most part. And so it's really about trying to find those systems or those agencies or those people that they have some level of interface with and get the word out.
Right. True Colors works with the Department of Children and Families. We work with the Court Support Services Division, which is juvenile justice. We work with schools all over the state. The young people come in through, you know, they call us through all these different avenues. And then, you know, I will call The Connection, you know, in this part of the state, I'll call The Connection or, you know, and try to make the referral in through that way. People do still come in through 211, though, right?
Yeah, our primary referral source is through 211, which is kind of what's called the coordinated entry. They kind of want just a one-stop door for all individuals seeking some type of shelter services.
I still think that you know, as young people turn 24 and 25 and start losing access to young adult services, we have an awful large number of trans youth, young adults, that I got a call yesterday or the day before for a 24-year-old trans girl, a young woman who, you know, had a terrible experience in a shelter because they didn't place her in a woman's shelter. They placed her in a men's shelter. And, you know, she was assaulted.
Wow.
And so now, you know, she's basically on the street and looking for what's safe but terrified to go back into the shelter system. Because the young ones, you know, early 20s, you know, it's just not very safe regardless of their orientation.
Yeah, I think that really highlights what we see both locally in Connecticut but also nationally is that that's the trans experience trying to access shelter. It really does not come across as a safe environment. And so your options are left are I can sleep on the street, which is also not particularly safe, or what we see very often is what's called survival sex, which is, okay, I'm essentially exchanging sex, my body, for a place to stay for a night or two. And the trans community, LGBTQ plus community, is about 7 or 8 times more likely to engage in that particular behavior than cisgender heterosexual kids. And that's where we see some really heavy risk. I mean, we know that LGBTQ plus youth have about twice the likelihood of early death when they're homeless than other kids. And so that's why this is a really key population to hone in on in terms of homeless services, in that they are by far the most vulnerable. We've got about 15 years worth of research now that's kind of screaming that particular message. And what it does is it reflects to us as systems, as homeless providers, that we have to get better at serving. We have to create better environments, right. Create better sense of safety.
And education.
Absolutely, right. Education.
Right. About 15% of the transgender population nationally is unemployed or underemployed. That about a similar percentage makes under $15,000 a year. And so, you know, having people be able to access employment, you know, people have skills, people have, mm-hmm. you know, a full range of capabilities, but if the systems are discriminatory.
Right. And that's our message to our listeners too. Right. It's not just helping the people out there or awareness for the families who might have a transgender, you know, child. It's the employer. Right. I'm assuming, and again, I'm really still not very educated on this, you know, shame on me, but I'm just not. So I think I had a transgender person. But you don't call them transgender persons. What's the right term?
You can call them a person who's transgender.
A person who's transgender,
Person.
As a waitress the other day. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the best waitresses I've ever had. But, you know, it was a little startling mm-hmm. in the beginning because it was obviously looked to me one way, but then when they spoke, it was another thing. So I was a little bit taken aback at first. I think I probably looked shocked, but then I got used to it, and it was great. I had a great experience. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just takes time to get used to that.
You know, the thing about gender is that it's so visceral, and we're trained so early on the messages about what a man is supposed to be like and what a woman is supposed to be like, that when someone is not that, we get very taken aback because we don't have the background or experience to understand that people are in all different mm-hmm. are in all different ways. And and the other thing is a, you know, piece. And we, John and I did a training with John yesterday, and his team, that, you know, that people who go through puberty in a body that they don't want to have as an adult. So if you go through puberty in a male body, but you're really a woman. There's going to be things that happen to your body that even if you wanted surgery or hormonal intervention, you can't undo the size of your hands and feet. You know, you can't undo your height and the width of your shoulders. And so, you know, folks who sometimes go through puberty in a body that they don't want spend much of the rest of their lives being read as something other than who they are.
Right.
And that in itself is a dangerous situation for people.
Right. Now, you just mentioned that you two did a presentation together. And for our listeners out there, do you do that? Because I know there's a lot of organizations that want to educate, you know, their employers, their employees, you know, that need to be educated on this. And I think the way that you explain it, like, I've learned so much today. So will you two do that together? Do you give presentations together?
Yeah.
I will say Robin's an expert trainer.
I know. I mean, I've got all these credentials here that I didn't even get to. You know, she's gotten leadership awards, and she's gotten creative leadership and human rights awards and social worker of the year awards. And so how can people reach you?
So our website is ourtruecolors.org. True Colors was taken back in 1994 when we were starting. and so it's ourtruecolors.org. And we do lots and lots and lots. We train over 5,000 5,000 people a year. In fact, I'm leaving here to go to an area bank to do a presentation with, I think they have 75 people from their team that are participating in that.
Just on awareness, so when they have transgender customers
and also,
come in. And
exactly. That, you know, LGBT customers and then LGBT coworkers. How do you create an environment where both are welcome? And we know from an employer's perspective, the more diverse your team is, the higher the level of productivity, the higher the level of employee satisfaction. So having LGBT people on your team improves productivity and improves the outcomes, the business outcomes, but it has to be an environment in which they feel safe to be themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, if they come in but they have to be closeted, that's a whole different thing. So,
but yeah, that's a huge help too. I mean, one of the things that we struggle with youth who are in our program is the employment piece.
Right.
We'll get through that initial barrier of finding an employer who's willing to give an LGBTQ kid a shot, but then they have to deal with all their coworkers.
Right. Yes.
And that's such a different story. So the education piece and just getting the message out there more, encouraging people to have more interface with LGBTQ mm-hmm. people, just to get more at ease and to learn it's okay. Right. You're going to be able to.
I think one of the messages we give in schools is that the number one reason that people get fired now is not because they don't know their job. It's because they can't get along with other people. You know, the U.S. is one of the most diverse countries in the whole world. And if, you know, we all have the skills to get along with people who are like us.
Right.
What we need are the skills to get along with people who are not like us. And so I tell people all the time, you don't have to agree. You don't have to approve. But you have to be respectful and you have to be kind. Mm-hmm. That's all you need.
Right? And then I would assume, too, you know, on the other end of that, LGBTQ community, they also have to be told, you know, be what you want to be, but you don't need to be, you know, distractive, or you don't need to be annoying with it. Because, you know, frankly, we've all seen that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the very flamboyant and outspoken and, mm-hmm. you know, and some people, you know, we need to accept it, but they also need to learn how to.
Mm. That's interesting.
Isn't it?
Because I think on the other side of that coin is that there's lots of LGBT people who would say, listen, straight folks, quit talking about your kids and your husbands all the time, because enough is damn enough.
So we're annoying too? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
So,
okay. Touche, I will say.
Because I think, you know, sometimes the humans can be annoying. Right?
Oh my gosh, so, you think so?
Right. And so
I'm annoyed every day by lots of humans.
Right.
Yes.
And so we can say to people, you know, in this environment, could you, in fact, that's a conversation we have with youth all the time. Like what matters to you? Right. Is this what, as we look at like your presentation, how you're dressed, you know, all the different things that's going on, what matters more? The culture of the job that you want to work in, or your ability to express yourself? Because if the job matters more, then let's talk about how you might have to moderate parts of who you are. If the ability to express yourself matters more, let's talk about what employers where that might be common. Because the truth is, there isn't a human being on the face of the planet who gets to bring their whole self to work.
No, right. nor do we want that.
Right, right. So we all have to modify ourselves in
we
some
do.
Way.
We do. That's a really good
another.
Point.
And,
right, I say that to myself every day. Well, you know, regardless of what goes on, mm-hmm. you know, the night before I walk into the office or that morning, mm-hmm. you know, I got to leave it at the door
mm-hmm.
and then just take a deep breath and walk in and be mm-hmm. professional and do what I got to do to get through the day and service my clients. That's a really good point. You really help me put things in perspective. You do. Because I, you know, people might say that I'm just one of those folks that's not acceptant, but the more I've been exposed to all kinds of lifestyles, the more I'm getting it, you know? So I think there is hope for people, even like me, who's like, what the heck is wrong with people, you know? But, you know, that's intolerance, right? So I think we all have to be a little bit more tolerant and perhaps open our hearts and our homes to these folks who, you know, it's somebody's kid.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
It's somebody's kid that's just, you know, has these question marks. And the good news is there are resources out there mm-hmm. for
We're looking
folks.
For a foster home right now for a 16-year-old transgender boy that the foster family that looked like was going to be appropriate for him. He was supposed to move in next week, and they backed out at the last minute. So he has experienced yet another rejection. And so we're really, and he can go anywhere in the state. So if there's anybody out there that has room in their heart, in their homes, understand that there's a teenager somewhere in Connecticut that's looking for you.
What'd you say, a 20?
He's a 16-year-old.
A 16-year-old transgender
boy.
Transgender boy, all right. And if you want more information, again, you can contact theconnectioninc.org, or you can also go to ourtruecolors.org. And again, Robin McCalin and John Lawler, thank you so much. This was enlightening. And again, I love it when I learn a few things, and hopefully our listeners did too. Whether you like it or not, this is the world we live in, right? All right, and thank you all for being part of our listening audience right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.